From the time I was born, I was raised in a home that the sounds of crying and heartache could be heard all throughout the house. You see, I was raised in a funeral home. My parents had converted a three-story row home with classic marble steps into a funeral parlor. And it was on East North Avenue in Cecil. And I think from as early as the age of six, I can remember sitting at the top of the stairs that led to the second floor. We lived on the second and third floor, peering down between the banister rails, watching, most oftentimes unnoticed. And I would watch families approach a casket, someone that they love dear. It was also not unusual for me to see caskets lined all around the room in the funeral parlor from head to toe, sometimes five or six caskets with people. And there were no dividing rooms, there was no privacy. It was all open. The only thing that separated one casket from the next were flowers. And I would watch families approach these caskets, the people that they loved. And my mother was always there to comfort them. They would be crying and sobbing, and she would be there to comfort them and put her arms around them and speak soft words. And I was so intrigued about how she did this. And eventually those tears would subside and eventually maybe even cease, and then there would be a little smile. I can't remember how old I was before I realized that everyone had to die. Even I had to die. And I would get so connected with the people who came there to see their loved ones that sometimes I would even sit there and cry and imagine this was my mom or my dad or my sibling. I also learned at a young age that you better look good when you die. You see, my mother was the hairdresser, she was the cosmetologist, she was the seamstress, and people would just thank her so much for making their loved one look so good. But on one occasion, one family came in and said, "I never saw Aunt Mabel look that good, and we don't want to see her looking that good." Mom had to make some adjustments for her. It may have been 3 days later, I knew they would be coming back for the funeral. That was our tradition. And even though there would be crying and still sobbing, there was gospel music and loud preaching and storytelling and sometimes laughing. Funerals, more than often, made people feel good. Not happy, but they made them feel better. So funerals were good. On Sundays, the funeral parlor was like a community center. All the funeral Marys came through. And all the people from the neighborhood came through just to see who they knew. Families would come back and sit on the sofa and talk to my mom, and I often wondered about what they were talking about. They talked for hours, and I often still heard that soft-spoken voice that she had. But it was a local place where people actually felt comfortable. In 1978, I went off to college, University of Delaware, to become a nurse. And we outgrew that small funeral home parlor because, you see, we were serving over 1,000 families a year in this little row house. We were often known and called the poor man's funeral home. And by 1978, my parents and had then decided that we had outgrown and needed to move, and we built another place across the street, a much larger facility. After becoming a nurse, I came back home to Baltimore, worked for a while in local hospitals, Johns Hopkins and others, and then decided to rejoin my family business and rejoin the legacy that my parents had built. I joined my siblings. All of my siblings had gone off and established their careers and came back too, and I wanted to be a part of this legacy. And this time when I came back, I saw grief from a different viewpoint with a different set of eyes. I saw the same crying and the tears and the weeping, but I also saw pain, I saw guilt, I saw despair, I saw families torn apart, I saw children who weren't able, fatherless and motherless children who weren't able to adapt. I saw people using drugs and alcoholism and violence in order to cope with their pain. I had a different set of eyes now, and I was seeing grief so differently. I became a bereavement counselor, a grief educator, and I began doing workshops and seminars and support groups all around Baltimore. I look back now, some 30 years ago, and realize, or 50 years ago, that there was a seed planted in that little girl that sat at the top of the stairwell. A seed planted that would one day be able to reach back and reach out to others to teach other people how to cope with their grief, that grief was a journey for transformation and for finding wholeness again and the love and the relationships that we lived. And I also recognize now that that woman, my mother, was the epitome of compassion. And she taught me that in a very simple way. That same house that I grew up in and learned about hurt and healing was torn down last month because it had been vacant for so many years and it was on the verge of collapse. But my family and I, we're committed to now, on that same site, build a grief and loss center that will once again be a place where hurting people, especially children who have to adjust to traumatic loss, will find new ways of coping. And once again, hurting people will find healing in those soft-spoken words and comforting hugs. And that building will be named Roberta's House in memory of my mother. Thank you.
Annette March Greer sharing her story on stage at the Creative Alliance as part of the Stoop Storytelling Series. You can learn more about Roberta's House online at robertashouse.org. And you can hear more stories from the Stoop at stoopstorytelling.com.